Hello, everyone, and Wednesday. Happy, happy Wednesday. So it's good to be here with you all today. One thing I'll mention while Nirmala is still in the room is that the Gina Lake Retreat is really filling up. I don't know the exact numbers, how many spaces are left, but I think it's less than 10 rooms. And most people take single rooms, that could be less than 10 people, but if they share, it could be more than 10 people. Also, even after the rooms fill up, people can still attend the retreat. The room is big enough for more participants. They would just have to stay at a hotel and get the commuter rate. But I thought I would just let you know that, Nirmala. How many roughly are already signed up? You know what? I can throw out a number, but I could be wrong because I'm not the one managing the retreat. So let me get the number from Jacqueline and send that to you. I think that she's going over everything now, and with a couple days, she's supposed to give me updated numbers. So I will send that to you. She was telling me how many rooms were left. So we're getting close to full on that retreat. But, it should be a lot of fun. Also, while I'm mentioning the retreat, the early bird rate did end yesterday, so that rate is no longer available, but just to let you all know, there are discounts available for Awakening Together members, and there are also discounts available for anyone who registers for all three retreats. So there's still the opportunity to get discounts. So if you're thinking about the retreat, just because the early bird rate has passed, that doesn't mean there aren't still discounts available. There are. So just go to awakening-together.org, click on events, and then the 2017 fall retreat. And there you will find all the information that you need, I think. All right, so we're here today for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And before I get started, I'm just going to play a song as my transition, because I've been doing website stuff all morning, and I'm ready to shift out of that mental way of being to a more heart-centered way of being. So I selected a song, or a song selected me. I'm not sure which way it happened. But the song that popped up, it's what we call an oldie but a goodie. It's by Judy Collins, and it's Both Sides Now.
Flows and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feathered canyons everywhere. I looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my another show.
Yeah, nice to know that we don't know. That's a great place to start. Rather than thinking we know. I can't help but observe what's happening in the country now. And, it's interesting how people think they know what's right. And they think they know what love is. And they think they know what hate is. And I'm not sure that that's true. You know, as long as there's an other side, as long as there's division in the sight, probably there's still an error there somewhere, right? So I guess this is why this song came to mind. You know, I don't know. I don't know what love is. I don't know what life is. You know, go back to that innocence and learn to look through the eyes of innocence and see if we can see something different. And today I am sharing again from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And today we are beginning on question number 13, page 7. Here's the question. Very short answer to 13. The residual impressions of objects, which in parentheses it says thoughts. The residual impressions are thoughts. The residual impressions of objects appear unending like the waves of an ocean. When will all of them be removed? And the answer that Ramana Maharshi gives is, as the meditation on the true self rises higher and higher, the thoughts will be destroyed. And I always think it's interesting how, Ramana uses the word destroyed. Destroyed has such an aggressive sound to it. But at least in my experience, the process, although it requires, I love Adyashanti's term, effortless effort, because the process, although it requires, some effort, some attention, it isn't aggressive. I find it to be, at least in my experience, I find it to be, it includes gentleness, restfulness, relaxedness, trust, patience, right? These are all very, very soft words. And I'm reminded right now of the Tao Te Ching. There's a line in the Tao Te Ching that I can't recall perfectly to mind, but it's something about how something soft overcomes what's hard. You know, like how water, running through rock, right? Yeah, wears down the rocks, exactly. So it's interesting, this word destroy. You know, I think it, my imagine, hear the key word there, I imagine, it's just a word that was used in that culture, in that Hindu culture. And so he's just using the words of his culture. I would say that the thoughts weaken and die. And I've mentioned this before, but that doesn't mean everybody here has heard it. I remember when I was new to the spiritual path, I don't know how long I've been on the path, 6 months, a year, something like that. And I was going somewhere and I was sitting on a plane and other people were still boarding the plane. And what I noticed, to my horror at that time, was that my mind was judging like every single person for something. It was a judging machine. You know, every single person that was getting on the plane, you know, what they were saying, what they were wearing, the way they were putting their bags away, how they were treating other people, whatever. Just judge. And then if we fast forward, and I don't know how far we have to fast forward, 5, 6, 7 years, I don't remember the exact time frame. There was another day later on that I was sitting on a plane And then I happened to notice that as people were getting on the plane, boarding, I was just observing, and that judging machine just wasn't happening anymore. The judgments weren't firing. I was just watching people, just observing. And so where did all those judgment thoughts go, right? I didn't destroy them, right? I didn't destroy them. I didn't attack them in any way. What happened was through a process of, you know, 5 or 6 years of recognizing that I didn't want judgment and changing my mind about judgment whenever judgment happened, you know, saying, I take that back. I'm not interested in that. That's not what I want. And just kind of, you know, looking at the mind in that way, in a very repeated way, somehow they receded. They died. So even though we hear the word destroy as we read Ramana Maharshi, you know, I really think it's more of they weaken and disappear. So again, the residual impressions of objects or thoughts appear unending like the waves of an ocean. When will all of them be removed? As the meditation on the true self rises higher and higher, the thoughts will get destroyed. And if there's anything else for me to add to that, I think the only thing I want to add again is that trust and patience. like Dev has written in the room, that trust and patience. You know, if you are meditating and you notice the mind is very, very active, you know, just persevere, as Nisargadatta Maharaj says. Just persevere. Keep meditating anyway. And one day that experience will probably be different. There'll probably be a surprisingly quiet mind, and you'll think, wow, where did this come from? You know, what happened to that loud mind I used to have? Right? Number 14, is it possible for the residual impressions of objects that come from beginningless time, as it were, to be resolved and for one to remain as the pure self? So again, remember, residual impressions of objects really means thoughts. So this question is it possible for the thoughts that come from beginningless time, as it were, to be resolved and for one to remain as the pure self? The funniest thing happened to me in meditation today. And I think maybe it happened because last night when I was in the gentle healing group, I shared that one of the tricks the ego used to play on me was it would take me in my mind to places that I love but haven't been to in like 20 or 30 years. And it would show me these places in great, great detail. And there was just such joy at being there again, you know. And I came to see that was a trick distracting me from watching awareness. And so I learned to let that go. I learned to let go of the temptation of revisiting these places. Well, this morning, you won't believe what happened. There's a shirt that I used to have years ago, you know, when I was like 30, that of course I've totally forgotten about. But when I had that shirt, I really loved it. And in meditation this morning, there was the shirt. The shirt that I used to just love putting on. It's kind of like a sweatshirt, but it was red and fuzzy, and I used to love to wear it hiking in the mountains when it was cool. And it was so funny that this shirt shows up, and I could feel there's my favorite shirt again. I haven't seen it in so long. And I could feel this attraction to seeing this shirt again. And then I realized, this is the same thing, you know, as the places. And of course, I went into the practicing to whom does this appear and went back into awareness, watching awareness. But I'm reminded of that because, because of this question. Because he says, is it possible for the thoughts or the residual impressions of objects? And you can see how remembering a place in meditation or remembering a shirt in meditation that I haven't thought about in 25 years, how that's really a residual impression of an object, isn't it? He says, is it possible for the residual impressions of objects that come from beginningless time, as it were, to be resolved? I mean, what I'm hearing in that question is there ever an end to these things that come in meditation to attract my attention. You know, and it's funny for me, you know, I don't, you know, I'm sure other people have different experiences. For me, the ego tries to trick me with things that I love, places that I love, now a shirt that I loved, right? For other people, it could be really bad memories, right? That's coming up, really fearful, maybe even fearful imaginings of the future that's coming up. But it seems that there's always something coming up to try and attract our attention during meditation. So the question is there ever going to be an end? I mean, there are so many things. You know, if I overcome the temptation of looking at places, then there's the temptation of favorite clothes. If I overcome that, maybe there's going to be the temptation of favorite meals that I ate a long time ago. If I overcome that, maybe there's going to be the temptation of friends that I haven't seen. I mean, is there ever an end to what's going to come up to distract me from my meditation? That's the way I hear the question. So, once again, the question, and then we will and then we will listen to Ramana Maharshi's answer. Is it possible for the residual impressions of objects that come from beginningless time, as it were, to be resolved and for one to remain as the pure self? And Ramana Maharshi says, without yielding to the doubt, is it possible or not, one should persistently hold on to the meditation on the self. Even if one be a great sinner, one should not worry and weep, oh, I am a sinner, how can I be saved? One should completely renounce the thought, I am a sinner, and concentrate keenly on meditation on the self. Then one would surely succeed. There are not two minds, one good and the other evil. The mind is only one. It is the residual impressions that are of two kinds, auspicious and inauspicious. When the mind is under the influence of auspicious impressions, it is called good. And when it is under the influence of inauspicious impressions, it is regarded as evil. The mind should not be allowed to wander toward worldly objects and what concerns other people. However bad other people may be, one should bear no hatred for them. Both desire and hatred should be eschewed. All that one gives to others, one gives to oneself. If this truth is understood, who will not give to others? When one's self arises, all arises. When one's self becomes quiet, all becomes quiet. To the extent we behave with humility, to that extent there will result good. If the mind is rendered quiet, one may live anywhere. You know, it sounds to me like he did a lot more than answer the question. But, you know, there may have been reasons for that. He may have known more about what was going on in the mind of the person that asked the question than I did, right? So, so we have a lot here to look at. So let's take it slowly and let's look at it. So again, the question was, is it possible for the thoughts that come from the beginningless time, as it were, to be resolved and for one to remain as the pure self? And the answer is, without yielding to the doubt, is it possible or not, one should persistently hold on to the meditation on the self. And if you guys have been attending this teaching time for the last couple of weeks, one of the things that you know that I have decided to practice is to be more vigilant, I guess is the right word, in a soft way, a soft vigilance. To be more vigilant and when I see mind wandering, especially in meditation, that seems to be where the practice is beginning, but I hope to expand it beyond the meditation. I'm using the meditation to strengthen the muscle. But in meditation, when a single thought arises, to immediately ask, to whom does this arise? Who am I? right? And to return the attention to the self. And I've been doing that for a couple of weeks, and I really enjoy the practice. So it's something that I'm very happy that I'm doing. And again, I've been always asking those questions, and I think, as I mentioned before, I just used to let a lot more sentences pass before I would ask, and now I'm trying to, not let a single thought, let my attention get caught into a single thought, right? And it seems like this is, again, the coaching he's giving here. What happens if I allow this thought to take hold in my mind? Is it possible or not for all thoughts to ever end, and just to abide as the self? I heard Eckhart Tolle once. I think he said that he only has about 20% of the thoughts of other people. And I think I heard Adyashanti the other day say he only thinks when he wants to think. And you see how immediately one thought started, is it possible? And then a whole conversation started in the mind, right? So what Ramana Maharshi is doing is reminding us, when that first thought comes, don't get pulled into the thinking that that thought is going to lead to. When the first thought comes, persistently hold on to the meditation on the self. Don't look for the answer, because in looking for the answer to the thought, all that's happening is you're getting engaged in thinking. Without yielding to the doubt, is it possible or not, one should persistently hold on to the meditation on the self. And that answers the question, but then he continues with a monologue. So let's look at the rest of this monologue. The next one is great, is really good as well. And again, maybe he knew this person, so maybe he knew more about what goes on with him. But he says, even if one be a great sinner, now think about that, a great sinner. Not just a sinner, but a great sinner. You've done horrible things in your lifetime. You know it. Everybody else knows it, right? Even if one be a great sinner, one should not worry and weep, oh, I am a sinner. How can I be saved? One should completely renounce the thought, I am a sinner, and concentrate keenly on meditation on the self. I think another interpretation of what Rama is saying right now is it doesn't matter what the thought is. It doesn't matter what the thought is, don't follow it. So if the thought is, I will never awaken, right? Don't follow that thought. To whom does this thought arise? Who sees this thought? What am I, right? Oh, I've been meditating for years and I'm getting nowhere. To whom does this thought arise? Who sees this thought? What am I? And again, as I mentioned last week and last night, the questions are pointing back to awareness. The questions are merely a tool to return the attention to awareness instead of the thought. So remember, every thought, in fact, Thich Nhat Hanh has a word for these thoughts. I wish I could remember his word, but I can't right now. But he has a word for the first thought, right? He has a word, because it's that first thought is going to lead to many other thoughts. And so the trick is to stop it at the first thought, right? Oh, I wonder if my husband is cheating on me. To whom does this thought arise? What am I? Oh, shoot, did I remember to pay that electric bill? To whom does this thought arise? What am I? Right? This is the teaching. And again, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I don't see anything in this where Ramana Maharshi is saying only do this during meditation. I really think Ramana Maharshi is saying what Jesus says in the Course, you are far too tolerant of mind wandering. And he really wants us to practice this all of the time. But I think meditation is a good time to practice, to strengthen this muscle, because it's a habit we're not in. So, you know, when we remember to do it while we're doing the dishes or brushing our teeth or walking the dog, that is great. But if we can definitely remember to do it in meditation, right? Because we're sitting down in such a focused way. And if we do it in meditation and practice in meditation, not letting the mind wander, kind of chopping it off at the first sentence by returning attention to awareness, then as we are strengthened in that skill, we can also bring that into our daily life. And I really think that's what Rama is recommending. Just always, always, always cut it off at the first thought. Do not allow your mind to go into this unnecessary thinking. So even if one be a great sinner, one should not worry and weep, "Oh, I am a sinner, how can I be saved?" One should completely renounce the thought, "I am a sinner," and concentrate keenly on meditation on the self. Then one would surely succeed. So there's another thing that he's saying here too, in addition to you know, letting go of mind wandering with the first thought, he's also saying that it doesn't really matter who you are or what you've done. You know, if basically if you just persevere and are sincere, right, you will succeed. There is no other requirement. You don't have to achieve any certain levels in any, you know, spiritual schools. You don't have to go back and apologize to everybody you've ever hurt. You don't have to have lived a good life this time around. You don't have to have good karma. You just have to sincere and persevere. Just stay, keep your attention abiding on the self, and do not tolerate your own mind wandering. And again, in a gentle way, right? We don't want to be judging ourselves for mind wandering. But just when you notice your mind wandering, let go of it. Stop it, to quote Bob Newhart, right? Just stop it. And then he goes on to say, there are not two minds, one good and the other evil. The mind is only one. It is the residual impressions that are of two kinds, auspicious and inauspicious. When the mind is under the influence of auspicious impressions, it is called good. When it is under the influence of inauspicious impressions, it is regarded as evil. And then he goes on to say, the mind should not be allowed to wander. Now, what's interesting about what he's saying here is he's not saying, if there are really good thoughts coming into your mind, that's okay. You know, if you're sitting around thinking about how much you love people and what all you can do for people and what all people have done for you and what all you can accomplish, and, you know, that kind of mind wandering is okay. Just avoid the bad mind wandering. He's not saying that. He says there are two kinds of thoughts in the mind. You know, some of them we call good thoughts and some of them we call bad thoughts. But there's only one mind. And here the word mind, because the word mind gets used differently, here the word mind is really equivalent to ego. And by ego, I mean identification with the body and the personality and the thoughts as me. So think about it for a moment. If I am thinking to myself, oh my God, I am so lazy. I just never get anything done. I make all of these promises and I never complete any of them. I bet everybody hates me. If I'm thinking that, those are I thoughts. Do you agree? Am I identified with the body, personality, mind? Do you agree? What if I'm thinking, oh boy, look at all this stuff that I've accomplished. I said I would do this and this and this, and I got it all done. I bet everybody is so happy. I bet, you know, my boss is proud of me. Those are still I thoughts, right? That's still identification with the body, personality, mind as me. So it doesn't matter if the thoughts are, you know, negative or thoughts. or positive thoughts, it's still the mistake of being identified with I. Not that anybody knows better, and I don't mean to imply that they do, because they don't. Therefore, everybody is forgiven. But right now, what's happening in our country, you know, a lot of people, at least on the news channels that I watch, I don't know what's happening on the other news channel, but on the news channel that I watch, everybody is standing up against racism. You know, we cannot tolerate racism in our country. You know, we need to be a country of acceptance, of tolerance, of love. You know, and all that sounds great. And trust me, I have nothing against us all loving one another. But the point is, the identification with the ego is the same in that thought process as it is in the, you know, what is it? I heard them chanting today, the white supremacists were chanting something like, whose roads are these? There are roads. Meaning, I guess, just white people should be on the roads. I don't know what that means. Whose roads are roads? I think that's what they were chanting. Whose roads are roads? The identification with the ego is the same. It doesn't matter whether the thoughts are auspicious, good, well-meaning, positive, or negative, attacking, hating. Ramana Maharshi is saying it's the same. And if we are genuinely interested in letting go of the ego, this is what we want to see. We want to see that the problem really is the identification with I, whether I, the nice, loving person that cares about everyone, or I, the you know, I don't know how a white supremacist thinks. I was going to try and imitate that, but I don't know how to imitate that. I, the, will make this a better world by getting rid of all those other people. You know, I don't know how they think, but it's still I. So if there's one mind, one ego identification, right? There's one mind. And the mind should not be allowed to wander. And in fact, that sentence continues. The mind should not be allowed to wander toward worldly objects and what concerns other people. The mind should not be allowed to wander toward worldly objects and what concerns other people. And in fact, the next sentence says, however bad other people may be, one should bear no hatred for them. What this says to me, and I will just speak for myself, I will let each one come to their own decision. But what this says for me is that it, in spite of the fact that obviously, you know, racism, hate based on race, hate based on religion, hate based on anything is certainly not something that I condone, and I would love it if it wasn't in our world, right? With all of that said, it would be a mistake for me to pick a side in this current conflict. It is better for me to stay neutral and remember that my focus is to accept the atonement for myself and to continue focusing on awareness, on seeing myself as awareness, not as a kind, loving person. And when the thoughts begin to get triggered, whatever those thoughts are, To whom do these thoughts appear? What am I? The mind should not be allowed to wander toward worldly objects and what concerns other people. That sentence is so clear. And right now, it seems like everybody's caught up in this. At least that's how it appears when you turn on the TV. If you keep the TV off, you might not even be aware of it. But when you turn on the TV, everybody's caught up in this, right? So it is concerning other people. It's a big topic in our nation right now. The mind should not be allowed to wander toward worldly objects and what concerns other people. And then again, however bad other people may be, one should bear no hatred for them. Right? That's important too. However bad other people may be, one should bear no hatred for them. Both desire and hatred should be eschewed. And, you know, why? You know, this is one thing that as I have matured spiritually, this used to get stuck in my head, and I'm certain it probably gets stuck in other people's heads. You know, like, what's wrong with desire? You know, what's wrong with desiring something? It's not that there's something wrong with it. We're not saying desire is bad. We're not saying desire is one of those inauspicious thoughts. Your desire could be auspicious. It could be good. The point is, there's identification in it. Who desires? Right? I, the person. Whether I desire, you know, world peace, whether I desire a new house, whether I desire more money, whether I desire a better body, whether I desire a new puppy, I desire, I, identification with I. So again, if the focus for the individual is releasing attachment to the ego and realizing one's true self, the identification with I is what needs to be let go. And there's definitely identification with I in desire. And in fact, he says both desire and hatred should be eschewed. The way a lot of people would say that is attraction and repulsion, right? I'm going to read this, what it's written here. You sparked a memory of being on the river looking at tall grasses swaying with the wind. I became aware as I was watching these tall grasses that I was flowing with the grasses. At that very moment, it dawned on me with so much love that I am where I am meant to be, being who I am. Thank you. However bad other people may be, one should bear no hatred for them. Both desire and hatred should be eschewed. All that one gives to others, one gives to oneself. Now this again is following the sentence about hatred. All that one gives to others, one gives to oneself. So let's pick a side. And I'm going to go ahead and pick, I guess, what they're calling the left, the side that does not want the neo-Nazis and all those other people around anymore, the side that wants what they call hate to be done away with. But isn't it possible, in fact, isn't it probable that a lot of the people on the left who want the hate done away with are themselves hating the neo-Nazis and whatever other groups there were, the other white supremacists? Judging? If not, if they wouldn't call themselves hating, they are at least judging. They're saying it's wrong, it's bad, you should not be that way. Right? And what Ramana says is, all that one gives to others, one gives to one's self. This isn't any different than the teachings of A Course in Miracles, right? Or this isn't any different than the code. You know, if I righteously hate or righteously judge a white supremacist, then I am also going to stand in front of the mirror one day and judge my own thighs. Or I am going to judge myself as stupid, or, right? I mean, basically, judgment remains alive in my mind. It's, you know, I can't judge out there and hate out there and not also judge and hate here, because I'm keeping judgment and hate alive within me. The question really isn't which side of this conflict is good, right? The question is, do I want judgment and hate to be a part of who I am? Mm-hmm. And if not, then I just need to relinquish all of it. And what's the opposite of judgment? In my experience, the opposite of judgment is acceptance, or at least allowance. What's the opposite of hatred? Love, or at least compassion. Now again, Ramana says, all that one gives to others, one gives to one's self. And then he says, if this truth is understood, who will not give to others? So what he's referring to here is, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, or give unto others as you would desire to receive. In other words, if we're choosing between hatred and love, which one do you want to receive more? If we're choosing between judgment or acceptance, which one do you want to receive more? If we're talking about judgment and hatred or compassion, which one do you want to receive? The one that you want to receive is the one you should practice, engage in towards others. So if you really want love to be your experience of life, not just to be loved by others. In fact, I would recommend being careful about that. If you just want love to be your experience, then love needs to be your presence. Or at least compassion. Right? Acceptance over judgment, or at least allowance. And I do think I used to find these things hard. So I understand that some people find them hard, especially in extreme situations like what's happening right now. I don't find them hard anymore. I find them easy. It's easy to love. It's easy to have compassion. It's easy to accept. It's easy to allow. It's easy to trust. It's easy to be the presence of peace. It's easy to be patient. You know, everything in time comes and goes. So it's easy to be patient, knowing that whatever is here now will pass away, right? And by living all of these, right, these are your experience. If you live hatred and judgment, they're wrong, I'm right, etc., then that becomes your experience. You can't get away from what you choose. Even if everybody else on the on the planet Earth was choosing love, if you were choosing hate, no matter where you went, you'd experience hate. You can't run away from your own choices, you know? It's like my dad used to say, wherever you go, there you are, right? You can't run away from your own choices. So, all that one gives to others, one gives to oneself. If this truth is understood, who will not give to others? When one's self arises, all arises. When one's self becomes quiet, all becomes quiet. You know, again, I don't know what has led him to go into this monologue of all of these answers, which appear to be beyond the question. But in my imagination, you know, it's as if somebody asked, Ramana, how can we ever get to world peace? How can we ever just get to peace, you know? And his answer is, let go of the ego. There can only be war as long as there is an ego. There can only be violence as long as there is an ego. There can only be hatred as long as there is an ego. Right? And listen to this sentence. When one's self arises, and that's the little self, the I, the ego, the I identification, when one's self arises, all arises. Oh, and let's see, I don't know where Cheryl is. We have somebody here who needs to be red dotted. Let's see if I can do it. Whoops, that didn't work. Let's see if I can. I haven't red dotted yet in this new version. Oh, well. Thank you, Cheryl. She got in before I could figure it out. Okay, good. All right, so when one self arises, when the I arises, all arises. So as long as I am attached to ego, I will see war, see hatred, see judgment, experience, you know, these things, right? When one's self becomes quiet, we could say when I merge into the heart. Then all becomes quiet. Okay, I need to figure something out. This person who we just red dotted is now sending me lots and lots of messages, and I guess I'll just have to ignore them because I don't really know how to. Wait, here we go. Block this number. Okay, good. That will put the end to the messages. When one self arises, all arises. When one self becomes quiet, all becomes quiet. So how do we get rid of the violence? And by the way, the messages that you saw on the board from the person that we just now red dotted, they're actually mild. Even though you can look at them, they're not loving messages. They're mild compared to what I just received in private. You know, private. The private was much more extreme and much more violent. And the question again is, you know, how can we not have this in our world? How can we get rid of this kind of hatred? You know, I don't want this hatred around me anymore. The answer? Let go of the me. Let go of the me. It's not about trying to change them. And it's not about fighting against them. It's about letting go of my own thinking and abiding as myself. And then he says, to the extent we behave with humility, to that extent there will result good. If the mind is rendered quiet, one may live anywhere. So what is humility? You know, he doesn't define it here. Well, I would say humility is the opposite of arrogance. And arrogance is identification with I. So living with awareness on awareness. Living with awareness on what I like to call life. I think I call it awareness life presence in my posts. Awareness life presence. Living as that instead of as the I. And he says, if you live as your true self, you can live anywhere. And all you will know is peace. Because your own mind has become quiet. Your own mind is not chattering about what's going on around you, having opinions, thinking this should be this way and that should be that way. Right? Because your mind has become quiet. You are not identified with the personal self. You are awareness, life, presence. You are eternal life. You are peace. Peace is all that you will experience. Remember, you can never run away from yourself. That's true if you're hating and judging, right? You can't get away from the hatred and the judgment. But that's true also if you're abiding as the self, if you're abiding in peace and love, then you can't get away from the peace and the love no matter where you go. No one can take it away from you. Or as we've heard it said before, your experience comes from you. So we only have 4 minutes left, so instead of starting a new question, I think I'll just reread what we just looked at so we can kind of hear it all at once. Is it possible for the residual impressions of objects that come from beginningless time, as it were, to be resolved and for one to remain as the pure self? The answer. Without yielding to the doubt, is it possible or not, one should persistently hold on to the meditation on the true self. Even if one be a great sinner, one should not worry and weep, "Oh, I am a sinner. How can I be saved?" One should completely renounce the thought, "I am a sinner," and concentrate keenly on meditation on the self. You know, it's like we have only one function here, right? Meditation on the self. One should completely renounce the thought, "I am a sinner," and concentrate keenly on meditation on the self. Then one would surely succeed. There are not two minds, one good and the other evil, right? We don't have good people and bad people. The mind is only one. It is the residual impressions that are of two kinds, auspicious and inauspicious. When the mind is under the influence of auspicious impressions, it is called good. When it is under the influence of inauspicious impressions, it is regarded as evil. The mind should not be allowed to wander toward worldly objects and what concerns other people. However bad other people may be, one should bear no hatred for them. Both desire and hatred should be eschewed. All that one gives to others, one gives to oneself. If this truth is understood, who will not give to others? When one's self arises, all arises. When one's self becomes quiet, all becomes quiet. To the extent we behave with humility, to that extent there will result good. if the mind is rendered quiet, one may live anywhere. So next week we will start with question number 15. How long should inquiry be practiced? You guys might even be able to guess the answer to that, but I'm guessing it's longer than 3 weeks. I'm guessing it's till the result is achieved, but we will read that next week. All right, so thank you very much for joining with me. It's been a lot of fun being with y'all, and I'll be back here tonight for the Michael Langford Study Group at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So maybe I'll see some of y'all then. Bye-bye.